Hi, y'all. You're listening to Ordinary People, Ordinary Things with me, your host, Melissa Radke, the ordinariest of us all. Welcome, friends and listeners. That was weird, as if my listeners are not my friends, or that my friends aren't listening. That's probably true. I am really excited about this week's episode for a number of reasons. Okay, here we go. Number one, we are on the countdown for the July 17th release of the book that will probably bring world peace. My book, Eat Cake, Be Brave. I can't say for sure that it will bring world peace, but it will probably get pretty darn close. I mean, does that sound like bragging? Because it 100% is. But I bring that up because for the next several weeks, I will be sharing an excerpt from the book in regards to that week's particular episode. So for instance, there's a chapter in the book entitled, When Hope Is Your Name, A Letter to My Daughter. Now, I wrote this chapter to my daughter, Remy Hope. Now, it would seem logical that after I read this particular excerpt, we actually sat down and spoke with Remy herself. But, oh, dear listener, we just listened to Remy not, what, 2-3 weeks ago? I can't interview her again. Not because she isn't awesome. She totally is. And not because she doesn't have a hella lot to say. She totally does. But because I had to take an absurd amount of lorazepam before that episode, and I don't feel like any doctor would totally recommend that twice. So we're not going to be talking to Remy Hope Radke. You're welcome. And that leads us to reason number two as to why I am so excited about today. About a year ago, in our sweet little town, signs began appearing in yards and the lawns of dental offices and restaurants that all said the same thing. Rally for Remy. Rally for Remy. I didn't know of one other single Remy in this town. So my first thought, as you can only imagine, was, dear God, she has told the town I still use a wooden spoon on her when necessary. And that's it. That's it. They're coming for me. But I was wrong. Across town, there was a family. The Sepulveda family. And their daughter, Remy. She had made an appearance a bit early, a bit weakened, and things were not looking good. Over the next many months, our town lit up with Rally for Remy signs and shirts and bracelets, and 2 hours away in a Houston hospital sat the Sepulveda family, gathered around a bed in a neonatal wing beside their sweet Remy. My friend, Stephanie, texted me many months ago and said, you have got to have Crystal Sepulveda on your podcast someday. You should hear her talk about her experiences with Remy. Well, done. I knew instantly that I wanted her to come and share the story of her daughter, Remy, of what happened, of what now is, and of how God moves in hope, even in the most hopeless situations. So let's get started today with an excerpt from the book. This chapter is called When Hope Is Your Name. I think you will see it fits perfectly into today's topic. It reads like this. Dear Remy, the first time I ever tasted your name in my mouth, I was standing at the foot of your brother's grave. I stood there for a long time and stared at the stone that bared his name, Elisha. I stood in the cold February gray. I had left my coat in the car, which was fine because I was mostly numb all over. My heart was not only broken, Remy, it was also jagged. You see, sometimes when things break, they fall into smooth pieces. Other times they hit the floor and land in jagged pieces that you can't directly see, but that pierce you night and day until all of the mess is cleaned up. Of course, that's the hard part, cleaning that mess up. And the process can take a very long time. I remember that the wind started to blow and my hair started to whip about. And as it did, I looked up and said the dumbest thing I may have ever said. I screamed it, actually. You owe me. You might wonder why these words were dumb. When something is given to us and then snatched away, we reserve the right to be repaid. Am I right? We get to keep score. We hang on to our receipt and fully expect to be paid in full. And at that moment, right there at that grave, on that day, in that wind, I wanted my return on investment. What he had given, he had taken away. I wanted the score settled. I felt I was owed, and I told him so. But the truth was, God didn't owe me. He didn't owe me anything. Even with the loss of that sweet baby that I had watched lowered into the earth, I had been given more than most will ever have. I had your daddy. I had my family. I had a home and friends and a coat that lay in the car, yet here I stood, numb and jagged and looking for a fight. You owe me, I yelled louder. I was alive and not laying in this very ground on this very hill in Tennessee. Do you hear me? I said, you owe me. I began to cry after that, Remy. I began to cry once I realized I was demanding a repayment from a father who had allowed me to get pregnant when I thought I couldn't, who had allowed me to safely deliver a child some worried might kill me due to hemorrhaging, who had given me moments with a baby that looked like me but lay still and gentle like your daddy. I screamed my rage at a God who had whispered things to me in my most broken moments, things that were so tender and kind that all I once was, lost and infertile and hopeless and angry, had washed away, and what I was becoming up until this scene at the cemetery was beautiful and whole and kin to hope. And that right there, that moment, was the first time I ever uttered your name, Hope. Listener, I love talking about hope. And there's not a greater person I could think to have on today's show than a mother who has experienced it firsthand. So join with me as we welcome Crystal Sepulvedo. Welcome, Crystal!
Thank you so much.
So I have to tell you, I told my husband before you came, I said, David, this is the first podcast I've really done with someone that I don't know that well at all. Like, we're like, we see each other in the tea room, kind of like, hi, how you doing?
So I'm nervous. A lot of mutual friends.
But we don't hang out.
Correct. But I have an interesting story.
Oh, God. Is it going to embarrass me? Is it about me in a swimsuit?
It's about Remy.
Of course.
No, it's not. Obviously, I knew you had a daughter named Remy, and I've seen her around town, especially at the ball fields. But this Saturday, I was there watching the T-ball all-star team. You know, small town. We got to support.
Uh-huh.
And I have a three-year-old Ranger, and he's running around, and I'm like, where is he? And I look over. You'll have to look at this picture on Facebook. And he's sitting in the other field's dugout with three girls, and one of them is your Remy.
Okay.
And they are just taking care of him, and he thought that was the awesomest thing ever.
Well, let me tell you something. Here's the deal. If he's with Remy, two things are assured. Oh, he is safe, mm-hmm. and he's having a
heck of a
lot
time.
Of good mm-hmm. fun.
And Ranger's our wild child that keeps us on our toes. So
and he's
them
what,
two
three?
Together.
Oh, he's
yes,
3 years
three.
Old. Well, see, and she's on crutches right now.
Yes.
So she got your back.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, if he gets out of line, she's been known to just whop him.
That's right. That's right. That's, and she's allowed to. I give her permission now.
Okay, sounds good. Well, listen, I am so glad you're here today. So the first thing I want to do is I want you to tell us about your family a little bit. Now, they are a terribly ugly family. Listener, listen to me. You're not going to want to look them up on the show notes.
Oh, goodness.
Just horrific people. Just really horrific people. No, they're absolutely beautiful. You can look them up on the show notes. There'll be pictures of her, the kids, certainly little Miss Remy.
Thank you.
But yeah, tell us about your family.
Okay, so Shane and I, we got married 10 years ago this year, and we have three children, Ryder, Ranger, and of course, Remy. You're right. Your Remy was the only Remy I'd ever heard of.
Uh-huh.
And I always liked the name Remington, but Remington Sepulvedo, I thought she'd never be able to spell.
Yeah.
So we cut it to Remy. So I have a thing with ours, and I kind of always liked Rocco and Remy, and then Ryder, Ranger, and Remy. It just fit.
I love it.
So 7, 3, and 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I was born and raised here in Hudson and always played ball my whole life.
Now, see, that's how little I know. I didn't know you're a graduate
right
of Hudson.
I am. I lived right here off 706.
Okay, so
right
listeners, you guys, just FYI, Lufkin is a small town and Hudson is the small school outside of the small town.
That's right.
And that's where I graduated, and you too.
I sure did.
And let me just go on record as saying, we probably were not like a year or two apart, okay? Let's say I was probably like the senior walking the halls when you were like in the kindergarten.
You might have held my hand and we didn't even know it.
Hey, shut up now. You're going too far.
I'm just kidding.
No, so you and Shane, yes, married with the three kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're an R family as well. I liked the double R,
mm-hmm.
like Remy Radke, Rocco Radke.
Mm-hmm.
And we had another R name picked,
okay.
ready to go. But David said no to more children. But you can have it if you want.
Okay, you got
to
tell me. Well, let's stop right there. I'm rebuking that. No more kids.
Okay, okay.
But maybe for an animal, if that's okay.
Ramsey.
Oh, I love that.
I loved Ramsey.
I love that.
I knew a Ramsey in high school. He was hell on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, yeah, we might as well.
It's really cute. Well, we also have a Rhett and a Rose, and that's a dog and a cat. So
a Rhett and a Rose.
Y'all
are in it to win it.
We are in it. I know. But
that's
no more.
Awesome.
We're done.
Well, listen, we're going to get started today. And clearly, everybody just heard you talk about Remy, and she's how old now?
She's 9 months.
9 months old. Okay. This is still a bit fresh.
Oh.
I'm sure.
Yes.
But because you and I don't know each other that well, and I am just simply a participant of Rally for Remy.
Yes.
Start at the beginning. Now, this isn't a 2-hour podcast, of course. Wish it was. I bet you money they'll text me and say, why wasn't it? That's so hateful. But in a narrowed down version as best we can, start at the beginning.
Okay. So I'm a nurse practitioner and I work in women's health. I've been doing that for 3 years. And when I found out I was pregnant, of course, I have that luxury of looking with ultrasound. And I had just gotten back from a weekend getaway with my mom and sisters and girlfriends. And I had just announced that Remy was a girl. And of course, I have two boys and I'm the only girl at home. And so I was obviously ecstatic. Mm-hmm. And so I get back to the office and, you know, it's kind of early for me to be looking. And I thought, oh my goodness, I need to confirm this one more time that it's a girl. And thank God I did. It was a Friday afternoon about noon, and I got our ultrasound tech to just scan me, and I could tell by her face, because I know her very well, that something was not right. And she said, Crystal, I have to tell you that there's fluid around Remy's heart. And
you can see that.
You can see it. And this was at like 17 weeks and some change. So just say 18 weeks. And I know at 20 weeks, Texas Children's told me the heart was the size of a quarter. So it was smaller than that when we found out. So I actually was seeing Dr. Suter, which has been my physician forever. And, you know, Dr. Suter's had her own issues, and she was actually in Houston getting a round of chemo. And I texted her and I said, you know, I wouldn't text you if I didn't need you, but this is what's going on. And I was really unsure. I had no idea the effects or how far, how big this was. I just knew it wasn't normal, mainly because I'd never seen a baby with a heart defect, actually. And so she drove in from Houston and went straight to the office. I met her there at like 4 the afternoon, and she
scanned me.
So you
knew instantly. If I knew my doctor's willing to drive in.
Yeah, I did. And I just knew it wasn't normal. Again, I didn't know how bad, but I knew it was concerning. She wouldn't come from chemo
right.
to do this. And so I met her at 4. She scanned me for like a good 45 minutes to an hour. And she said, Crystal, you know, there is definitely something going wrong. You know, she told me different scenarios of what it possibly could be, but we were so early. It was hard to tell. She said, let me work on getting a hold of some doctors in Houston. I'm sending you there. I'll get you there as soon as I can. And I know from referring how long it can take, weeks sometimes, to get in with these physicians. And Monday morning, she called me and she said, hey, I pulled some strings and they want to see you today. This was Monday morning. I found out Friday.
Well, let me ask you this. What did that Saturday and Sunday feel like?
I was miserable.
It was like an eternity.
So not only, did I get an ultrasound, I think on that Friday as well, I went and had labs done. So anytime you're talking about a heart defect or something going on, you get genetic testing because they go hand in hand sometimes. And so, of course, I had blood work that can take up to 2 weeks to get back. So that weekend was pretty miserable.
Say the least. Absolutely. So Monday comes.
And, you know, I just have to say real quick here, the Lord was working behind the scenes before I even had a clue that there was a problem. I mean, who can get in with their physician at 4 p.m. on a Friday who just came from chemo? Who can get into Houston Perinatal that exact same day? And then on Tuesday, we were actually having that fetal echo of her heart. I mean, it just was accelerated, you know, and that's just not a normal scenario. So we found out on Tuesday she did, in fact, have a heart defect. She had two, a hole in the top part and a hole in the bottom part. Part of her heart.
Okay, but on a scale of 1 to 10, mm-hmm. 10 being the most serious, mm-hmm. what are we looking at here?
Actually very serious, because not only did she have that, they kept telling me that the bottom part of her heart had an aneurysm that had ruptured, and so it had like a flap, and you could see this very clearly. Blood was leaking out, and that's what was causing the fluid around her heart. And so we were going every week for an echo in Houston, and the problem started to arise when that fluid was becoming too much pressure on the heart for it to beat. And so at one point, I think it was around 23 weeks, they were really debating on going in and draining fluid from her heart while I was still pregnant. Mm. And the problem with that was I wasn't even viable. So viability for a baby, for us to try to revive if you were to deliver, is 24 weeks. And so to try to do a procedure that, in fact, your water may break and you may have a baby and they're not viable was very, very scary.
So did they do it?
So we didn't. We kept going. And of course, I just kept praying and believing that it was going to be okay. Of course, I was scared to death out of my mind. And
so the pregnancy would not be viable at this point.
If I delivered, correct.
So they're just sending you home going, wish we could do this, but we can't.
Well, this was what they told me. If I came back next week, if the function of the heart was worsening, they were going to do the procedure. But it's still me going home.
Hopeless.
Correct. You know, I need to mention this because this is something that really had an effect on me. So when you go do these echoes, you're in a dark room because they're scanning you. It needs to be dark. It's quiet. Of course, the ultrasound tech, she doesn't talk to you. She's not allowed to give you any information. The physicians are behind the wall watching them scan you. So they're seeing it real time. And it's quiet as a buzzard. And she takes about 200 photos, which takes anywhere from an hour to 2 hours. And I'm laying there wondering, is the fluid better? Is the fluid worse? Is the heart function better? Is it, you know, and my own knowledge always worked against me because then, you know, I'm not great at ultrasound, but I could tell this and that. But that being said, it was like the turning point of where my faith started to kick in because it was so quiet. I had that quiet time and I had to keep telling myself, no matter what I see and no matter what I understand, I still have to believe and have faith that he can turn this around. It was hard.
I'm laughing at the absurdity.
It is.
Of laying there so still, so quiet for so long and knowing that in this moment, God, it's just you and
it's
I.
It's just you and I.
It's mano y mano. It's man to man, you know.
If not, my brain would overcome me and it would not be quiet in that moment. My mind was just blown. And so I had to literally overcome every thought and just, I had a few scriptures, I had a few words that I said over and over and over again.
So it was the perfect example of taking every thought captive, which I actually just heard Joyce Meyer say this like years ago. She said her translation of take every thought captive is to tell your thoughts to sit down and shut up.
That's right.
So you did that.
I had to just say, well, I kind of referred it, you know, I don't want to give too much credit to the enemy, but I had to say, you cannot control my mind right now. I'm going to live by what his word said. Mm. And, you know, I listened to a song over and over during this time. It's pretty popular now, Even If by Mercy Me.
I don't know it.
Oh.
I don't know it.
You're going to listen to this when we get done. You have to.
Okay.
But basically it says, even if you don't move this mountain, my hope is still in you. And I remember looking at that monitor and saying, even if the worst happens right now, I'm still going to have faith and hope and just believe that this is going to turn around.
Wow.
You know, so that's what I did.
For all the people that are going to end up writing me and saying, why don't you know this song? Just for the record. Okay, everybody calm down. I am the girl that gets one album like in her head and then I'm on it for a year and a half and then I move on to the next album.
That's usually okay? Me. So Taylor Swift. That's mine. No, I'm just kidding.
And we brought pop culture back to the podcast.
Right.
Okay, so I want you to get us to where, how did she end up coming so early? I mean, get us to that.
So we were watching these echoes. So eventually the fluid around her heart reabsorbed. Her heart function was totally fine. We knew she had two holes in her heart that could be repaired after delivery. That should have never made her come early. However, at one of our follow-ups, which did eventually spread out, I was 28 weeks and I knew again something wasn't right because, you know, the silent click, click, click. And then I'm going to go get the doctor. I knew that was not good news. And the doctor came back in and she said, have you ever heard of something called double bubble? Well, even in my experience, I've never heard of double bubble. I never had one of these. But basically, it's a sign with narrowing or closure of your intestine, the small intestine. And what happens is fluid before the closure or narrowing and after builds up. And so it looks like two bubbles on either side. But basically, the physician was seeing that. And she was a cardiologist and had no idea about this. But she recognized it. And she immediately called my OB-GYN in Houston and said, hey, we're seeing this. And he said, come right back over to see them. And of course, I did. And what happens with this is, and which definitely happened to me, is it's hard for amniotic fluid to be swallowed and then go throughout the whole system. And then babies, you know, pee it out. And then that's how you make amniotic fluid in the layman term. Okay. She obviously wasn't digesting it. And so it started to build up on me, meaning my fluid was very elevated. So normal is like 12 to 20. When I delivered, the day I delivered, my fluid was 52.
Oh, mercies.
It was crazy. So what happened is all that fluid put me into labor. And so I went in like on a Wednesday.
Did you have normal signs of going into labor?
Well, not really. I don't know how in depth we want to get. I woke up at 3 a.m. My son came, Ranger, my wild child, and said, I need to go to the bathroom. Took him to the bathroom, went and laid back down with him. And then when I got up, I felt like some leak. And I'm like, oh, that's not normal. Went to the restroom and there was actually blood. So I knew that wasn't normal. Okay. Went right to the hospital. Of course, they checked me. I was definitely in preterm labor. And they thought maybe abrupting, which basically means the placenta can tear away from the wall of the uterus. And it's a medical emergency. They watched me for most of that day. And then Dr. Sullivan, who was actually covering for Dr. Suter because she was having her own things go on, she ended up lifelighting me to Houston because it wouldn't stop. So that was a Wednesday night I got there. And then on Friday, of course, they got it to stop with fluids and medication. But on Friday, it started back. And when he checked me, I was like 4 to 5.
And you were how many weeks?
So 32 weeks even. 8 weeks early.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. So we knew at this point that she had a heart defect and now we had a small bowel problem that was going to have to be fixed right after delivery. And then You know, I was nervous because in my mind, I'm thinking of all the premature things that I know that could happen. And then also facing a surgery, you know, it would take me hours to explain all the horrible fears I had. But, you know, one of the silly ones was she's going to have an incision down her chest. I mean, this is a girl who one day is going to wear bikinis, you know, and in the world we live in today, which is horrible, you know, they're judged for the color of their hair, you know. So I worried about
a scar right,
right down the middle, you know. But now I look back and I'm like, man,
perspective,
that's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, that is not a big deal. So, of course, I was scared at delivery. And, you know, another thing, it's funny, I like to just joke around, is not only did I learn a lot of new things in my field, but I experienced every, probably every possibility you can have as a pregnant woman. So if you need advice, come see me. I went into labor. I dilated completely. We pushed one time and our heart rate dropped. So ended up having an emergency C-section.
Oh my gosh.
Emergency C-section. And I'm, you know, that's another fear in itself. So it all happened so quickly. And then I never heard her cry. They took her out immediately. I sent Shane off with her. And then they came back and told me, you know, we got her intubated. She's doing okay. But yet we found another problem.
Oh.
And I said, okay, you know, I just had my guts cut open and I'm trying to just recoup and grasp on to reality here. And they said that she had a TE fistula where your trachea and your esophagus is connected to each other. So your trachea goes to your lungs for you to breathe. Your esophagus goes to your stomach for you to digest food. Well, these were connected and they're two separate pipes in perspective. Well, they were connected. So air was being pushed into her stomach and they thought her stomach was actually going to rupture. And so when they went to intubate her, they had a lot of difficulty because of the fistula. So long story, it was another surgery that we had to do urgently. Whereas, you know, the ASD, VSD can be fixed even months down the road. The small bowel, it had to be fixed within the first couple of days, but it wasn't something right then. I delivered at, I think it was 10:18 on Friday night, and I didn't get back to a room until about 3, and at 7 a.m. they said, hey, we need to know what hospital to send her to. So I delivered at Texas Women's. They didn't do the procedure there for Remy. So she either had to go to Texas Children's Hospital or she had to go to Memorial Hermann.
Of which you could not leave and go.
And I could not leave. I was stuck there. Well, I was a bad patient. I was supposed to be stuck there for 48 hours. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Crystal, I literally feel like apologizing. I mean, we didn't even know each other, but I'm just saying, I didn't know that it went this deep with this many issues.
Sure. And probably even for people that do know me, probably don't know the in-depth.
Here's the thing, as I'm sitting here listening, first of all, I don't create podcasts for myself. I create podcasts for other people. And I know that whatever brings me hope, there's a very good chance it's going to bring other people. What I didn't want is to have you come on and be like, so anyway, my child spent 3 days in the hospital because of a hangnail, but God really saw us through. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew your story was powerful, but there have to be people listening right now going, no offense, Lord, but holy crap.
I know.
Like if this woman can tell this story, I mean, guys, this goes so deep. Mm-hmm. I mean, the problems with this baby were so numerous. It had to have seemed like Everest. Like you were trying to scale Everest.
Yeah. I mean, every day was something else.
So talk to me about those days in the hospital. What did that look like?
Well,
you said you were at one, she was at another.
Yeah. So at 7 a.m., they said, where do you want to send her? It's urgent. We got to get her out of here. And of course, I just said, Texas Children, send her there. I knew it was the best. Shane went with her on the ambulance and I stayed there. When they got her there, I think by the time they got her there and did all the exams and stuff, it was about 10 that morning. By 3, she was in surgery. Like I said, to correct the TE fistula. At this point, they said the biggest thing we have to fix is that. And we need to make sure her stomach's not ruptured. And if she's stable, then we'll try to fix the small intestine and just get it all out of the way. However, it's pretty critical. Even after the surgery, I was FaceTiming the surgeon and I couldn't be there to really, you know, get a feel of what he was thinking. And so I just looked at him in the eye and I said, how successful are you with the surgery? I mean, with the outcome. And he said, I don't think you understand. This was life or death. And he said, we corrected all three things with no problems. 100%. It was perfect. And so, you know, that was tough being at my hospital, Shane being away. You know, I worried about him.
And let's not forget there are two other children that you probably have not even been able to think about.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, they don't even know we've delivered at this point.
Oh,
they
no.
just think that I'm, you know, back at a doctor's appointment. Have no idea. I was a wreck. Of course, he was a wreck. But, you know, I leaned on him because during the 5-hour surgery, I learned a lot about my husband. But he put on headphones and he put a song on, God of Miracles, which is another common song. And that was been like the anthem of Remy, and listened to that for 5 hours. And he refused to believe that anything else was going to happen, but that she was going to come out perfect. And, you know, I wanted to crumble. I wasn't there. You know, I was worried about him. I was worried about her. And yet he was just such a stronghold for us that, you know, it turned everything around for me.
I will tell you, and if they're listening to my podcast and have followed me at all, then they know that I had a son who passed away. as I'm sitting here, there are so many similarities that I wanted, not nearly the depth of emergency situations like you had, but a couple of things I'm like, oh, I've heard that word before. But I know my podcasting etiquette is to let the speaker speak. So I'm not busting in on you, but I will say this. Worship music, it is not just to make the church feel good on a Sunday morning. It is life-saving, life-giving. It is keeping your thoughts in line and on the holy God. I'm going to tell you what, it changed my life. And I feel now when I sing it in church, I'm not singing it for fun or pleasure. I'm singing it because it is life-saving. And Shane had to feel the same way.
It saved his life. It saved my life. And you know what? I have to believe that it might have even changed some nurses' life there because we lived on worship music. We've always loved worship music. Shane helps with the lights at church. He thinks that's the coolest thing ever. You know, and I just love music. But when you put in a different perspective, and it literally saved my life because I could have went a different path and had a different outcome right now. But anyway, so we hung on to a couple of songs, and that's what he did. So it was tough. So then I was not a good patient. I finally demanded on Sunday, which was a little less than 48 hours, that I be discharged. I knew how to take care of myself. I knew the signs if I need to go to the ER. I'm like, I've got to go see my baby. So I did, you know, and they let me out, thankfully. And I drove over there. It's only like a mile, but it seemed like the longest mile ever. And I walked in and seen her. And, you know, that was an emotional. I'm used to babies in the NICU, but when it's your own, it's a different story. You forget everything medical and, you know.
Was she exceptionally small?
Actually, she wasn't, which is why they say okay. That she had some successful surgery. She was a good 4 pounds, 11 ounces, so a big, healthy baby.
That sounds like a cup of coffee to me, but in that situation.
But in that, yeah, I mean, she could have been 1 pound, 2 pound. You know, she was a big, healthy 32-weeker, so it was good. However, she looked tiny in the little isolate that they had her in. And not only that, when you have tubes going everywhere and, you know, she's on the ventilator and machines are surrounding her, it makes her look even smaller. And so, you know, it was horrible. But however, I still had that instant love. You know, I still knew that she was my roomie. And even though I was so scared and so worried, the first thing I could think about is just getting my boys with her. Like, they were going to love her, you know, and we were all going to be a family. And then brings me to my next thing. So it was the day before the first day of school. You know, then I had to be a mother to them. And I said, Shane, you got to stay here. I'm driving back to Lufkin, less than 48 hours post-op. And we got in the car. I drove back. Yes, I was a crazy person. And I got up that next morning and I took him to school because just in my mind, I had to stick to some reality. And that
some normalcy.
Some. Yeah. I mean, I had to have some normalcy, and I was not missing Ranger's first day of school, you know, and I didn't know if the school was going to kick him out. It was only the first day, but that's how wild he is. So I knew I needed to be there.
There may only be one day, Shane.
Exactly.
I got to go.
That's right. So anyways, I took him and, you know, I remember getting the call. I was leaving St. Cyprian's, literally walking out, and she had just coded on the table.
Oh, for the love.
Yeah, it was horrible. I wasn't there. Shane was there alone. His mom actually lives in the Woodlands.
Why is Shane not here?
I know.
Why is he not at this table?
He has a different story.
God, I gotta send him a pizza or something. Yeah. Bless his heart.
I know. I'm telling you, this man, he showed me a lot of, you know, strongholds. But long story short, in that matter, you know, it was several weeks of up and down. She had coded a couple of times, and basically we were fighting prematurity, and now her heart. Come to find out, the holes were fairly big. And so when you have holes in your heart, it can overload the lungs and make them work harder. So she had a lot of trouble breathing on her own. And there was a time where we had fever 5 different times. And so every time a premature baby has fever, they work them up for some kind of infection. So 5 times before surgery, they would not only do blood work, but they would do urine culture. So they would put a cath in. They would draw a spinal tap from her back. So it was just torturous. And never once could they find a reason. And they finally chalked it up to heart failure. And they said, hey, we're going to have to do heart surgery sooner than later. And, you know, it was time to face the big open heart surgery, which, you know, I dreaded for many, many months. And, you know, then to come out, it was actually the easiest procedure and easiest thing we faced. And
really?
It truly was. We were only in the cardiovascular ICU. That's just for cardio patients for 5 days. I mean, and then they kicked us out, you know. But I have to chalk that up to for 7 months, we prayed for that heart. I mean, we believed for that heart.
That's right.
You know, all those quiet, silent, click, click, click echoes. I was praying and believing for that heart. And it really was the easiest thing we've done. Of course, Texas Children's and the surgeons have a lot to do with that as well. But so we get out of the hospital and we feel like we're on that downhill. Like, okay, she's going to be better. She's going to breathe now. We're going to be on our way home. And then, of course, we face another challenge. They find out that she has severe tracheomalacia. What that is a big word for softening of the trachea because of where they had to fix it. Well, then it gets real weak. And so every time she takes a breath, it kind of collapses.
Okay, every time something else came up, were you at least hearing good news about the things that had been treated? Were they healing? Were they fixed?
Yes and no. I feel like we face so many challenges. I mean, I'm leaving out a lot. I mean, one day this would happen. They thought that she at one point may need a liver transplant. Yeah, we face so many challenges. And every time, literally, my mom would be there and say, okay, Crystal, you got to go out in the hallway, because I wanted to crumble. You know, I'm a mother, and to see your child fall and scrape a knee is bad. But, you know, to be talking about life factors, I wanted to just fall apart and just scream why, which I never did, and we'll get there. But I would walk them halls, and I would have my breakdown, and I would cry and let it out. And then I'd walk back right in the NICU, and I'd say, okay, this is something else that we're going to pray for now. I mean, you know, I'd add it to the list, and I'd say, you know, enemy, we're rebuking this, and this is not how it's going to be. You know, I don't want to sit here and be like, oh, I'm some strong spiritual woman that didn't face any doubt and fear. Every single day, I was scared to death. I mean, every day I wanted to take that pain and that suffering that she was going through. But, you know, it's okay to be broken and
vulnerable
and feel those things, but we can't stay there.
Right.
And so I would take my time in the hall, and then I'd come back and be ready to face whatever we had.
That is so good. And I liken it to that moms are, sometimes we are called up for active duty.
Sure.
We train for this, baby. We train for this. And it's not just that we train as moms. We train as warriors of Christ.
Sure.
There will be a time, to the single girls that are listening, to the high school girls that are listening to this, we train spiritually, just like we train to be a parent or a wife or physically fit. Spiritually, we train for moments like this.
That's right. I got to add something into that. That's good. I actually posted it today. And I heard this yesterday, actually, from our pastor at church. But, you know, and I was thinking about it when he was saying that yesterday, and it hit home with me. Basically, we got to have more life on the inside of us than death that's around us.
Ooh, that's great.
So when you go through something that feels like death, and this did, you got to start speaking that life over it.
And where is it coming from if you ain't planned for it and you're not prepared for it?
That's right. It's a lot harder if you don't have anything on the inside of you but death and negativity that you've spoke for all these years. But, you know, the good Lord was working on me for many years before this.
I love that.
And so we had to start speaking life over death from day one. Mm-hmm. And man, it definitely changed our atmosphere. And now we have sweet Remy.
Hi, everyone. Did you know that Ordinary People, Ordinary Things is being brought to you by my new book, Eat Cake, Be Brave, coming out July 17th. I have two questions for you. Number one, have you pre-ordered yet? Go to Amazon.com or wherever you buy books and order one for you and your bestie and your mom and your aunt. That's all I'm going to say about that. And number two, join me every day for the 30 days leading up to the book release on 30 Days of Live. You can find me on Instagram Live at 12:30 Central or on Facebook Live at 2:30 Central. Am I going to talk about the book every day? Not every day. Am I going to talk about my husband every day? Not every day. Am I going to talk about my bad kids every day? Probably. See y'all there. Okay, how many days was she actually in a hospital?
So we're in the hospital for 128 days. She got out December 22nd, which we thought would not ever happen, 3 days before Christmas.
Dear Lord.
Yeah.
You ain't got nothing on your plate. You're just a mom with two other kids at home.
Yeah. I mean, Christmas tree? What?
Yeah, I can't imagine. Did you have a Christmas?
We did. We actually did have a Christmas. I tried to go home on the weekends for the boys, so I'd stay there during the week. And, you know, they had to have a mama. So on the weekends, I'd go home and we put a Christmas tree up and did our soccer and basketball and tried to live a normal life. And then Sunday came and I had to go back, so...
When you brought her home, was it like carrying around a teacup?
I feel like we're still carrying around a teacup, really.
Well, that's going to be till she's about 18. But were there medications and feed her this?
So we were on a couple of medications, really just two medications. But the biggest thing is she couldn't really go around people. You know, it was right in the middle of flu season, strep season, everything season. And so we had to treat her like a little box. I mean, she stayed in our house, people coming in and out, couldn't be sick, you know, taking your shoes off, things you should do probably anyways with a newborn. But it was accelerating. And so we just had to be very protective, because if she got sick, it could be fatal.
Did doctors, were they fine with releasing her, or were they hesitant?
Well, it just happened so fast. It accelerated and she just like turned around for the good and just started doing everything.
Talk us through that. When did you begin to see this turn?
So like I said, she had tracheomalacia, and at one point they were talking about putting a trach in because her airway was just floppy and it's hard to breathe that way. And so at one point they had did a scope where they went down and looked and said, you know, we couldn't even get her back intubated. We almost put a trach in, which is basically a hole into their trachea. And I, you know, that's a whole nother ball game. Basically, it's life support and you can go home on it. Who wants their child to have that? And so that was horrible. And then all of a sudden, it just started flipping around at the beginning of December. She had never had a bottle. And within a week, she sucked down a whole 3-ounce bottle. So it just went fast after that.
Wow. Well, let's talk for a moment, because there's not a lot of babies listening, but there's a whole lot of women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk for a moment about you. And you talked about the life inside versus the death that's all around. What did God show you during those days? What was He speaking to you? What did you do in a hopeless situation?
Well, I think the biggest thing I had to learn is patience. I'm the most impatient person. And during these situations, things don't come immediately. They come through endurance. And they told us the whole time that this journey in the NICU was not going to be a quick race. This is going to be a marathon. And so I really had to learn, you know, patience and to have faith. Because what you're seeing with your eyes doesn't necessarily mean that's what's happening behind the scenes. And I had to believe that. So, you know, I'm sitting here seeing her struggle, but I had to just focus my everything on the word. Basically, my words had to line up with His words, because His words is His will. And so that's what I started doing. A dear friend of mine, actually from the day that we found out there was a heart defect, she printed out little index cards and put faith scriptures all over them, laminated them. And we posted those on my vanity. I posted it in my car. I put it at work. So every time I thought about it, I mean, it was right there. And I could say, whatever that scripture said, whatever you ask for in prayer and believe, then it's yours and go. Your faith has healed you. So it was just basically encouraging
my
faith.
I will live and not die to declare the works of the Lord.
Oh, yes. And for Remy's sake, every time something came against her, I would literally lay my hands on her and say, Remy, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. By His stripes, you are healed. And God came to give you life and life more abundantly. And I would do that every single time, every day.
And Crystal, you have to admit that there had to be days when, and I'm just being completely vulnerable and real, your physical body did not even mean what your lips were saying.
Oh.
But you knew to say it.
Mm-hmm. You have to train yourself, because I wanted to, this is where I was getting at earlier, I wanted to look to heaven and scream, why? I wanted to know why she had to suffer again, day after day, but I never did. I never did, because I knew this wasn't God's fault. I knew God didn't put this on her. I knew that if I continued to have faith and I continued to give Him praise, that He would turn this around for His glory. And that's what He's done. Everything that they said was going to happen didn't happen, in fact. You know, He turned it around. And so, yes, there was days I wanted to give up. I mean, there was days that I wanted to say, Lord, take me right now. But, you know, I didn't. And I, you know, I have to really be thankful for the people surrounding. I mean, we had such a community just rallying behind us. But not just that, you know, I had spiritual leaders that were encouraging my faith and saying, you can't give up. You can't give up. And so, you know, like I said, I stuck to scripture that just kept telling me, you know, to trust in the Lord with all my heart and not lean on my understanding. And that's just what I had to do.
You know, I've been a journaler my whole entire life. And I've always said that when I die, they're going to probably make a tell-all movie about my life due to the fact that I've said so much in these journals and they're hidden in my closet.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take some down during difficult times in my life and you will see page after page after page of faith being built. But then you'll see that one day, that Tuesday, where you say, truth is, I'm tired. Truth is, this sucks. I hate it. I wish I wasn't here. I saw a woman cussing in Walgreens. I wish this was her and not me. But the next day, you go back to faith, because the truth is, where does that Tuesday get you? It doesn't get you anywhere.
Correct.
But faith allows you to get to the next day and the next thing and the next bad report and the next surgery. I loved the fact that you just said you had those laminated cards everywhere, so that wherever you turned your head, there was the faith word.
You know, and it's pretty weird that you said this. I also kept a journal the entire stay. Every day I wrote in that journal. And so I have my testimony and I have my story, but one day Remy can read that and she's going to have her own, you know,
yes.
It's going to be a totally different perspective, but just to see what all she's overcome and, you know, to kind of live it out through me, obviously, but I'm so thankful for that journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it'll be my book one day.
Oh, I hope so.
We'll see.
Would you say that there is any particular scripture that got you through that time, mm-hmm. or would you say, yes, all of them?
Well, the three that I just told you, I mean, you know, fearfully and wonderfully made, that is like plastered everywhere. If you see Remy, you're going to see that. But, you know, John tells us, if you believe, that you'll see the glory of God. Every single day, I see His glory, His mercy, and His grace when I look at her every single day. James tells me that I must not doubt. I have to believe. Otherwise, I'm like a seed just being blown here and there. And I can tell you, in the NICU, you feel like a whirlwind. I mean, you feel like you're just blowing from here and there because of everything that's happening and coming and going and what you're getting. I mean, it feels crazy. And so I had to believe. I couldn't just pray to God, please fix this, and then turn around and say, oh, he can't fix this. I had to really believe it.
I love that.
And so, you know, his word, yes, I lived by it. But yes, I had certain scriptures that I read every single day just to revitalize my spirit, to just not give up.
When you look back at this time, and I love that you said someday, Remy, someday she's going to ask, what are the takeaways for you and Shane? What did you learn? What do you look back and go, God was so good at this? Or I remember the day that he told me this. What were some of these takeaways?
Basically, the biggest thing that I learned and took away from this is faith. Mm-hmm. So hope is yours. Yes. With your Remy, mine's going to be faith. I learned that if you have faith just the size of a mustard seed, which is all I had, you're going to laugh at this. A friend actually gave me a jar of mustard seed because I had no idea how small a mustard seed was, and I had it in my car forever. If you have faith just the size of that, then he can move a mountain. And it really taught me. Before, I never faced any life circumstances that mattered, you know, like this. And so I took away that I just got to have a little bit of faith. I don't got to be some big, huge spiritual leader.
You're right.
For this to happen to. I'm just an ordinary girl like Paul, who I'm not anybody. Who am I to tell this story? But he's using me.
Paul just had a meeting on a road. That's and right. It changed his life forever.
That's right. I mean, I'm definitely no great background, and I don't even like public speaking and talking in front of people. But he's gave me this platform all because of a little bit of faith.
That's exactly right.
That's it.
You know, when I was first married and David and I were so poor, as opposed to today when we're just rolling in the money, God help us. That's me building my faith right there.
That's right.
My granny sent a letter to me to Nashville, and on the outside of the envelope, how precious it was that it was on the outside, because I wonder how many male men and male women looked at this. It was an envelope, and with all of the tape that she could find, she taped a mustard seed to the outside of the envelope. Itty bitty, it's so tiny.
It's tiny.
She put tape all over it so it wouldn't fall off, and then she wrote in pen, this is all you need.
It's all you need.
And there was a letter inside. Why she didn't do it inside, I don't know, but this is all you need.
That's incredible.
Which is great, because sometimes
that's all you have.
That is all you have.
That's all you have.
Wow. I love that mine's hope and yours is faith. Wow.
And between us, we got love.
And
so
between
we're covered.
Us, baby, we got covered. Love. Oh my goodness. God is so faithful.
That's right.
Speaking of faithfulness, I know you had to have run into families. You weren't the only family in the NICU. First of all, I want you to tell me about that. But secondly, how do people do it without God?
How? I am in the medical field. Okay. This is like my specialty. And I could never have been prepared for this situation ever. I obviously never had a baby in the NICU, but I don't think anyone ever realizes that this even occurs. Like, it's literally almost like a different world. And until you experience that, you have no idea what these families are facing. It's absolutely incredible. But you're right. We met many different families there. Some specifically, you know, I know there are several families that we actually went and prayed with. We knew a couple people locally from Lufkin that had delivered early and had babies there. On one scenario, sent Shane, because it was right after we had Remy. And he actually went and prayed with his family over at a different hospital that was in Houston. I'm a firm believer that, you know, if you're struggling or going through a dilemma, you find someone that's going through that same dilemma and go help them. I've been taught that. And if you can help someone else through that situation, yours is going to turn around for you. And so that's what we did. I mean, even though obviously our focus was on Remy, you know, you see families sitting all around you. We knew one specifically that the baby passed away, and we, as close as you can get to a family in the NICU, you know, we were close with them. And Shane spent that baby's final hours with the family. And so, you know, I knew at that moment that, as horrible as it was, that we were placed there divinely, maybe for these families.
I believe that.
One of our primary nurses, she actually, during this whole experience, she was going through infertility, had no idea. And she comes to me, and of course she knows what I do. And while she's taking care of Remy, and she said, you're not going to believe this, but I'm pregnant. And I said, you are? And she said, yeah. She said, they're not giving me a lot of hope because of her past experiences. And she said, but you know, I'm just believing. I said, let's pray. Let's pray right now. And she's like, well, I don't want a lot of people to know. I said, it's all right. So she sat down in the chair beside me. We put our hands on her belly and we prayed for that baby. And let me tell you, last week I got a text of a picture of that sweet baby girl.
No, you did not.
I sure did. And so it wasn't just families. It was nurses that, you know, I connected with. And, you know, God knew what I needed, and I needed a lot of stuff for Remy, but he also knew that me being able to help someone else would renew me. And it did. Me being able to help her made me, you know, feel like, okay, we can keep on. You know, it was just building endurance, which is what I needed. So, you know, during her pregnancy, she'd ask me questions and I'd feel like I'm helping her because they were doing so much for me. I needed to give back.
My question, though, is if you knew, if you could be assured that all of this happened so that Shane could spend the final hours with a grieving family and you could spend a few moments with a woman to build her faith, would you do it all again?
Man, that's such a hard question. But you know what? I've had a lot of people reach out to me and multiple ones have said, y'all's testimony has changed my life. And if I don't sit here and tell you and believe with my whole heart that I would do it again, then everything I've told you is a lie. Because it's all about having faith and believing. And so if my faith is true and I believe it, then I have to tell you, yes, I would do it again, because if it saved one life, then it was worth it. And so, you know, every time I got that text that said, it's changed my life, just the words, because I would do these Facebook lives. Again, that was to renew and encourage my spirit. Someone would message me and say, this has changed my life. And I said, well, if it was for you, then everything was worth it.
Well, we are talking about hope and we are talking about faith. You mentioned the scripture, your faith has made you whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps going over in my head because you're only 9 months removed from this. Mm-hmm. That's not long. Your perspective at 5 years will be even greater than it is now.
Sure.
But God does always complete the picture. Mm-hmm. Just like that woman sending you the picture of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Every story that he starts, it finishes. It's whole. Every story is whole. Every story is completed. And I don't know that the life, the birth, the difficulties with Remy, I don't even think that that story is over in as much as how it's going to end up touching people.
Oh, sure.
No, I mean, I believe her health is whole for sure. I mean, the story, the long lasting story of that. But you just talked about how you're scared to speak in public, but you have such an incredible story and you deliver it so genuinely and so well that you must be prepared to sit by the grieving mom. You must be prepared to sit in the hopeless situation. God may take you there. And honestly, I can't think of a more equipped person than you. I mean, you're killing it right now.
Well, that's what I said. I'm like Paul. He was not equipped, but God used him.
And he went.
And so I have to obey and go. And so even when Remy got out, we said, you know, our story and our job's not done yet. We're just getting started. So.
And when I think about you, just the picture of you walking those halls by yourself, walking those halls, psyching yourself up, praying, believing, speaking the words only to go back in.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, okay, I'll take a deep breath and I'll go back in. You were just preparing really yourself. I believe you were, you know, you walked those halls and you probably left footprints wherever you went. You walked
sure.
them so much. But man, I just believe God was getting you ready.
He was.
Really do. So I hope, I know. There are women that are going to listen to this with big old pregnant bellies and not a lot of hope. And oh my word, if I had been pregnant with Elisha and I had heard this podcast. Oh, to think of the faith I would have had to continue to pray. And I just saw the saying the other day, how many people were right at the finish line of a battle and then they quit praying?
That's right.
Don't stop believing.
That's right.
And don't
That's
stop
right.
praying.
That's right.
Thank you so much for being
Thank
here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I'm going to have you back in a second for some lightning round questions, but your story is killing me, man. It's
Thank
so
you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
And if you want to know more about Remy Sepulvedo, because listen to me, Crystal's not the star here. She is not the star.
I am not. I'm what Remy's
is,
mom.
That is right.
That's it.
Honey, for the rest of your life.
Yes.
What's her middle name?
Remy Diane.
Remy Diane is the star of this show.
That's right.
And I remember my rally for Remy post on Facebook. You could barely even see her face because of all, not of just the wires, but of the bows that Crystal would
right.
put on that baby's head.
It didn't matter how many wires she had, she's going to have a bow. They know she's a girl.
That comes from a mom who's had two boys.
That's right.
But listen, you can look at her and you're going to want to check her out on the show notes. We're going to show pictures of when she was itty bitty tiny with those wires and the big ball of love and sass that she is today. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
For a copy of today's show notes, visit our website at ordinarypeopleordinarythings.com. You can also keep up with all the latest by following my mom on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Y'all know she is too old to do Snapchat. Also, I would love it if you would go to wherever you buy books and pre-order a copy of my mom's book coming out in July, entitled Eat Cake, Be Brave. You're going to be disappointed that isn't about cake. But you are going to love what she has to say about how she decided to live a life of courage and bravery. I'm so proud of her. And though she will probably not sell as many as I will when I finally write a tell-all book about her someday, I do hope you'll help her out.
Okay, enough with the serious talk. Let's enjoy ourselves for a moment because you've been nervous.
That's right.
Woo, you can just rest and relax. Okay, here we go. Lightning round questions. These are this or that questions. Don't think about them. Don't stew over them. Just give me your gut instinct.
Got it.
And considering I don't know you at all, you could be lying to me, but I feel like I know you a little better now.
Okay, bring it.
Planned or spontaneous?
Planned.
I knew that about her, and I've only been sitting across the table from her for 45 minutes. Okay. Text message or call?
Text message.
For the love.
All my friends know. They do not call me. They text and say, please call me.
My voicemail says, why are you calling me? You know better than that.
I need that.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Okay. Netflix or cable TV?
Netflix.
Okay. Appetizer or dessert?
Both.
Sandra Bullock or Julia Roberts?
Julia Roberts.
No way! Are you? Okay, I'm not.
You know why? Main reason. She looks like my mother a little bit.
Really?
Bit. Everybody always said they looked like each other. And my mom loves her, so.
Well, there you go. I'm a Sandra Bullock girl all the way.
I love both of them.
Ocean's 8 just came out, and mm-hmm. I was like, had to be their opening weekend, but I'm a Sandra girl. Hey, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I cannot thank you. I want to have Shane Sepulveda on here.
Bring him on.
Oh, my gosh. I do not want to have Ranger or
no,
Ryder.
You don't.
But I would love to have Shane. I think that you guys are an incredible family. I've only heard wonderful things about your family
you.
And about you. We do have mutual friends. And I have a feeling that if we said, hey, 1 year from today, come back on this podcast, I think God is going to continue to use you, and the stories that you'll have will be outstanding.
Yeah,
I'm praying for you.
Thank you so much.
And when that book comes out, when that ministry starts, come on, give me a little backstage.
I'll give you a little love.
Thanks for joining us today for Ordinary People, Ordinary Things. And special thanks to Crystal Sepulveda for being with us. Wasn't that amazing? Make sure to subscribe to our little podcast that could so you don't miss a thing. And leave a review, but only if it's a good one, a 5-star review, something your mother would be proud of, okay? As we wrap up today, I'd like to close with the closing of that same chapter. The chapter that I had read to you at the start of this podcast seems even more important now, especially as Crystal was talking about sharing this someday with her Remy. Anyway, here's what I wrote at the end of that chapter. Years ago, I began the process of writing a book. It was called Dear Remy, and it was a story of how you, Remy Hope, came to be in my life. It was a story of how one severely broken person, played by me, can be given a gift so undeserved it takes your breath away, played by you. I still play around with it from time to time, but the truth is, that was not the story the world needed to hear. The story the world most needed to hear was not the one I wrote about you, but the one I am writing with you. That is this story, Remy. That is Eat Cake, Be Brave. See, this book is made up of a lot of stories from my childhood and my teenage years. It's made up of the choices I made and the hand I was dealt. There's laughter in this book and some sadness. There are stories and morals and butt-ins from your grandmother. But this book exists because of you, Remy Hope. When you came into my life, bravery took on a new meaning for me. I viewed things differently and I asked different questions. I wondered how I would answer for the fear you would someday face and the ineffectualness you would eventually succumb to if I didn't do my part. I needed you to see more than a broken woman crying in her closet. I needed you to see me smart and capable, hardworking and feisty. I wanted you to see me try and fail and try again. I wanted you to watch as I cooked it and burn it or as I wrote it and wadded it up. I wanted you to watch me question things and seek out answers. Attempt the things people thought I was ridiculous to try, feel beautiful in my own body, wear sleeveless on the cover, because I want you to be brave. I want you to be you. Maybe the book on how you came into my life will come to be someday, but I'm okay if it doesn't. That would just be a story about you. And I am much more interested in writing a story with you. My life will never be the same since you screamed your way into it, Remy Hope. Remy Hope. Remy, my hope. I am no longer jagged. I fit together perfectly. Thank you for that. With all my heart and soul, I love you.
Mama. You know, I've had several women tell me, oh, I love the name Remy. I'm going to remember that name someday. Let me tell you something. Beware, sweet mama. The name Remy comes with its ups and downs, as does the name Melissa or Crystal or Diane or Candace or Shelley. All of us come with a story attached to our name. All of us come with an entrance into a broken world and the need for a savior. As Crystal said, all of us come into death, needing the life inside of us. All of us are born into hopeless, and all of us, every one of us, have the choice to choose hope. The real miracle from today isn't Crystal. It isn't even Remy. It's hope. It's our faith. And as we know, miracles and hope are all around us. We just get so used to seeing them, we call them ordinary things. Till next time.